Hi, everyone.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode.
Welcome back to Espresso Epilogues. We're here today with a very exciting episode because it's on philosophy.
Woo.
So today we're covering existentialism and a bit of absurdism.
That's right.
We're talking about Dostoevsky and we're talking about Camus.
Two essential philosophers in the field of existentialism and absurdism. So tune in. We're about to dive in.
So over on our TikTok, it seems like everyone is obsessed with everything existentialism and the more philosophical side of the literature we love. So hopefully you're going to enjoy this episode because we absolutely love this topic.
And what a better time to bring it to you than during the most consumerist time of the year, Black Friday.
But we're here to talk about
meaning. But we're here to talk about the meaning of life.
Perfect. Well, let's do this. Aspa, would you like to take us through a little brief of existentialism?
So existentialism is a philosophical doctrine, and it values the significance and the importance of an individual experience and the choices made around the human condition and humankind. And of course, this is a very broad definition. There are many subcategories in terms of freedom, responsibility, existence, absurdity, along with the exploration of the meaning of life.
Okay, amazing.
Could you tell us what absurdism is?
Yeah, perfect. Let's do that. So absurdism, on the other hand, is more about recognizing that the nature of the universe and of life is inherently absurd and learning to make peace with that absurdity and therefore not necessarily seeking a higher meaning, but understanding that the meaning is in the present. So absurdism is very much about the present moment. It recognizes the conflict between our tendency to look for inherent value and meaning in life and the human inability to find any higher meaning in a world that sometimes seems chaotic and irrational. So it basically sees the universe as absurd. And some people think that absurdism is kind of a pessimistic philosophy. To me, it doesn't seem like that. It's more about just making peace with the present moment and with learning to be in the now rather than thinking about the fact that the universe being irrational is necessarily a bad thing. Basically, absurdism doesn't see the meaninglessness of the universe as a problem, but rather as kind of a liberating way to see life.
And if I might add to that, it also kind of characterizes the human condition as one that isn't necessarily supposed to find the meaning beyond that of the present moment. I've heard a couple scholars mention this. I can link some text below, but it really isn't our role and our responsibility to figure out beyond the forces of the meaning of life.
I really love that personally. Like when I first stumbled upon it, I found it very, it resonated with me because I've always seen, I don't think the universe is meaningless in the same way that Camus does, but I still do think that so much meaning can be found in the present moment in a way where you don't need to stress yourself with finding a higher meaning because you have right now, you know? And I love that.
You're going with the flow.
I felt very seen by it in some way.
You're going with the flow of life where it takes you.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's dive into our today's books.
Yeah. So we chose these two books, White Nights by Dostoevsky and The Outsider or The Stranger by Camus, because they capture existentialism and absurdism really well. They're great, great books, masterpieces in their own way, both 5-star reads for me. And I just think there's so much to be said about how they both see life and the meaning of life through these stories. So let's dive into it. Aspa, do you want to start with White Nights?
I would love to. And the way I kind of dissected White Nights is I went over some themes, quite like I did in previous episodes, if you've noticed. So the themes I'm going to dive into are first and foremost loneliness. Then we've got the desire for human company, along with friendship, a little bit on literature and novella, and of course, existential reflections. So Ari, I hope you'll join me on a discussion on it. But initially, what I'm kind of going to mention is would you like to kind of give us a little rundown of the plot, if that's all right with you?
Of course. So White Nights, basically, we don't know the main character's name. I think he's just seen as the dreamer. And he meets this girl, Nastenka, and forms a beautiful connection with her. She's a young woman that's waiting for her lover to return. But over four nights, Nastenka and the dreamer have these conversations and become attached to each other in a way. They open up to each other. For him, it's the first time he's ever felt like that for someone. And you just see how he starts finding meaning in this connection. And for a little bit, he gets some, I mean, this is a spoiler alert, but he gets some hope that they're going to get together and finds a lot of happiness in that moment. And both of them really just embrace the possibility and like the liberation of deciding to get together until Nastenka's lover returns and she decides to go with him. And the book ends basically with the dreamer reflecting in a letter and saying that just having had this moment of happiness of thinking that he was going to be with Nastenka is enough for him to be happy his whole life. You know, that gave him enough meaning. And yeah, that's pretty much all.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for giving me that rundown. And so let me jump into my first theme to explore. So initially, as you said, this dreamer is incredibly lonely, very isolated, very estranged from the world around him. This man is too frightened to go outside because he's too afraid of social interaction, particularly with women. Dostoevsky mentions the dark allows freedom from the other person's gaze, which is why the protagonist likes to go out at night so that he can be out of people's sight. And what's paradoxical about this is this takes place during St. Petersburg summer, and so the nights are white because there is no darkness. The sun doesn't.
Oh my god, I never realized that.
I mean, little parenthesis, I hope that's right. I'm 99% sure that's right. And so he gets captivated by Nastenka, except Nastenka was actually being harassed by a man as she was also out on a nighttime, which is also a manifestation of her solitude. So she was outside, she was lonely as well. She was awaiting for her lover to come back, except at the time they really didn't have any indication of when they would come back. So she was just out there indefinitely waiting for her lover to be back. Two lonely characters. Dostoevsky also has such an incredible quote. It goes, "And what wonderful things are done every minute. Crowds of people rush by us. Each individual bears with him his own world, his own strange world," which just captures, once again, the mysteriousness of humankind, that there are so many souls, each being their own personas, each existing as own entities. And the main character is observing that, yet being so estranged from his own. I'd like to kind of dive into like that desire for human company, which is also this book. It kind of makes you think of like all the very big paradoxes about humankind. And so these two characters are so lonely, yet they're both so craving of human company. Yet there's kind of like an absurdity to the situation because the dreamer is rejecting all human interactions because he's so afraid of them, yet he's also so in need for one.
I think that a big pattern is that the search for meaning is very connected to finding companionship and finding meaning in human relationships. So it's kind of like the impact of his very ephemeral connection with Nastenka on his very isolated existence highlights for me even more how significant human relationships are in constructing meaning. So that's very tied into that existentialist concept of finding a way to create your own meaning rather than absurdism that's like meaning is just in the present. Existentialism here seems to say meaning is in human relationships in this case.
So do you think that on some level his complaints and his whining to Nastenka are justified? Because the character does, as he's so desperately craving someone and eventually finds a woman who will actually listen to him, he takes advantage of this and just starts spewing of the problems of mankind, of the absurdity of being alive, the absurdity of human beings each living in their own world. The narrator is essentially having an existential crisis, and he's spewing that onto Nastenka, the only person who's ever listened to him.
Yes, I mean, I love a good Dostoevsky existential crisis. You need to read Crime and Punishment because it's basically the main character, Raskolnikov, having a, 600-page long existential crisis.
I think it's about time I read Crime and Punishment after I read
Yes, the Brother I can't Cameras. Wait. Yeah. You guys stay tuned for that episode. It's going to be a deep dive.
I think what is quite sweet about the story is that there's an infatuation between both characters, and it's undeniable, right? But both of them are kind of thinking, is this worth pursuing? And through their own dilemmas and their own narratives, they, and this is sad, they don't end up being together because they're both kind of pushing for the greater good. And on Nastenka's end, that is the relationship she had with her lover, the past lover. There's a lot of loneliness and a lot of it is preventable. Yet they both choose to remain lonely. They both choose to take the path of loneliness as opposed to putting in the work to form a human relationship.
That's very interesting to me. Do you think it's because partly they'd rather preserve what they had during those four nights and keep the meaning that it had, which the book ends on that note, like maintain the meaning and the beauty that this connection had for those four nights, rather than choosing to face the reality of what it would be like for them to, as you said, put in the work and just see where reality takes them?
That's a great point. I think, thank you very much for the transition, because it makes me jump into my next theme, which is the theme of friendship. And along with the conventional notion of, at least at the time, that men and women cannot be friends, I think that's something that's touched upon by Dostoevsky. Despite their attempt to keep this a deeply platonic connection, once the dreamer confesses his love to Nastenka after the four nights, Nastenka is like, this bond is broken. Like, once you've confessed your love, this is it.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm so intrigued by the whole philosophy behind human connections and the meaning we find in them and just why we do the things we do. So I love this book, and I love the theme of the dreamer basically saying that he wouldn't dream of making Nastenka sad in the end of the book and ruining her. I think she was getting married, right, with the guy. Yeah, he was like, I wouldn't dream of making you sad and like taking anything away from your happy day for all the happiness you gave me in that moment of us almost being together. And just the lifetime of meaning that he finds within this is beautiful.
Very much so. I'd love to talk a little bit about the existential pondering that Dostoevsky has through his character, the dreamer, because after all, it does seem to me like Dostoevsky really, the dreamer really is his alter ego. He's out here and he's going through his own existential crisis through his character. And the internal monologues and the introspections that are going on, the quest for significance through his struggles, it really does give you his notion of absurdity for this existence and the barriers that really do inhibit his desire for connection, which really does seem to me, you mentioned it earlier, that his meaning for existence really also does have to do with his relationships. What I find really interesting is that Dostoevsky is a man of very strong faith. And so usually what you do see in a lot of Russian literature is a big commitment to religion, and and all suffering and all meaning is placed through one's faith. And Dostoevsky doesn't reject it, but he also doesn't justify it through religion. The center of his narrative was around Christianity, and it got taken away when he was imprisoned in Siberia. But then once he was out, he once again gave meaning to life through his suffering. And what seems to me other authors have done in this time is they have given meaning to suffering as they're going to be promised an afterlife, and all suffering is rewarded in a sense. And what's really interesting is that in White Nights, there really isn't, I mean, unless I misinterpreted that, there really isn't a mention of the suffering, this existential pondering that has to do with religion, that has to do with a higher meaning, with the divine.
I think he makes it very human, and that's a thing in all of his books. He makes these grand matters of the universe very down-to-earth human, so he doesn't need to appeal to the religious aspect to make his point.
There's also a struggle of individual identity and the protagonist feeling like he hasn't truly been living. He hasn't really been living according to societal norms. He isn't going out, finding a wife, getting married, you know, serving his purpose as a human being. But there's the pondering of like, is this really what it's supposed to be? Is this really what meaning of life is? Is just to carry on through this societal expectation? And I really think that, you know, like you said earlier, like, creation of his own story, of his own path, and the longing for his own genuine experiences are what creates meaning for our dreamer here. And There's so much more I'd like to dive into, but I think this is a great introduction to White Nights and to Dostoevsky, and I'm so thrilled to do more episodes on it because this, you know, as a 24-year-old, really interesting having an existential crisis.
Highly recommend.
Highly recommend. And also keep in mind, this is a very short read, but it's not like one to just, you know, skim through. It's one to really digest. I think it took me nearly 2 weeks to finish it just because I was like jotting down every point.
I love that. No, you did great. I like fully read it too fast. And
oh, I don't worry. I did that with Metamorphosis because I was doing that with a challenge. I read it in like,
I haven't read it yet.
44 minutes, which is not a good idea. Because you don't retain
but
anything.
I know Kafka's The Trial could have been a good addition to this episode too. Once we get around to diving deeper into Kafka, we're going to do an episode for sure.
All right. Well, would you like to dive into Mr. Camus' Beautiful The Stranger?
Let's do it.
Cool.
I mean, I guess it's like in English you say Camus, I think. Camus. But it's kind of weird. Like we both speak French, but do we sound annoying when we say Camus?
Not screw that. People need to know. Did you see that one YouTuber who said Camus?
I did not. But like, disturbing. Whatever works for you.
Very deeply. Like, the disrespect. Go on, please.
So Camus has some very interesting things to say. And I really like a lot of the things he thinks about life. His whole vibe is loving life and being in the present. And when you hear him talk in recordings that exist, and he just seems to have a real joy for life. And I love his energy. So while White Nights finds meaning in a happy experience, in a connection, and lingers on the fact that that's so much meaning that it can just make you happy for life in a way, the absurdist philosophy of The Stranger is more like finding meaning right now. So it's a very, very different book in many ways. First of all, Dostoevsky is very romanticized and emotional in his prose in this book. I mean, the monologues of the dreamer are so kind of emotional in a way. And in the Stranger, it's the exact opposite. So it has a very stark and straightforward narrative. The tone of voice is very unique. It's very matter-of-factly. And at the beginning, you might be like, why is this like this? It's very different. But then you understand that it's like this because it's a crucial part of how Meursault, who is the main character, sees life in general, because he's just a very matter-of-factly guy. He's very unemotional. And that's kind of why he is an outsider in the first place. So the story is very simple. It's this guy, Meursault, who goes about life very kind of, I would say he seems detached, but also it's not a real detachment because what he's doing is just being in the present. So he gives off the impression of being very detached, but he spends all this time just like looking at people passing by his window and just watching the world around him. I feel like he's kind of permanently in a sort of meditative state in a way. His mother dies at the beginning of the book and he doesn't have much of a reaction to it. So people think he's weird.
Do you want to read the line? Because I think it's one of the most famous lines in literary history.
Yeah. So the opening sentence is basically kind of like, mother died today. Or yeah, it depends on what translation you have. But I have strong opinions about the different translations of this book.
Okay. Yeah.
It's like, in French, it gives off a more casual vibe. When you say mother died today, it sounds the same, but I saw a translation that said my mother died today. Mm-hmm. And that did not give me the same energy, you know?
Really?
What I mean, it's like tiny differences, but you feel like it gives different meaning. So if you just start the book like my mother died today, it seems more personal.
It does.
In a way, like, it's weird
because if you say mother died today, it sounds very cold.
It's it's like his matter-of-factly way of saying things.
Yeah, funny you mentioned, my translation said maman died today, which is mom died today.
That's good, that's perfect, because
that's
that like
perfect.
Sticks to French. But the translation I got here in London, I think like the basic one I found at Waterstones, just said my mother. And I was so surprised because like it seems like such a crucial start to showing who he is, but very subtly. So he describes going to his mother's funeral, which is like a very small funeral procession, interacting with a few people around it, And then he gets in this situation where he ends up committing a sort of spontaneous murder. I found it kind of, there was so much heat in that moment, and it was so interestingly written. He really didn't have many thoughts going on, but he just seemed to be going with the flow a bit too much.
He described it so well. I think it, like, that really just captures the absurdity of it. It was like, there's his apathy toward, you know, societal norms. He's like, am I going to kill someone? I'm going to kill someone. That really just reflects human existence and its absurdity. You know, the trial scene where he's condemned for his unemotional response to it and how irrational he's behaving. That's emotional detachment, and that ties into the absurdity of it.
Absolutely.
So it's like, why should I get emotional with something that makes no sense to me?
So he goes on trial to see if he's going to be sentenced to death. And the thing that everyone comes at him for is that he's so unemotional. So they mention his mother's death and his lack of reaction to it as a way to prove that he's guilty for the murder. And just, you know, they really appeal to his non-emotional personality to show that he's guilty and condemn him. And that's the whole thing around him being an outsider. But he's just kind of observing. I think that's the best way to describe him. Throughout the book, he's just observing. He very much feels like an observant, yes, of everything they're saying about him, which is interesting. And then basically, as he's in jail and he's waiting to see if his appeal to the death sentence is approved or not, there's this incredibly written scene where he has this fight about religion. Do you remember?
Do you remember?
And it kind of, the book picked up the pace so much, and it just went from this like slow, unemotional narrative to such a passionate, fiery scene where he just has a crisis and he just is thinking about the meaning of life. And that's when he, I think, has a click and realizes that he's just been finding meaning in the present all along. And the book has one of my favorite closing sentences. So this quote is, "Gazing up at the dark sky spangled with its signs and stars, for the first time, the first, I laid my heart open to the benign indifference of the universe. To feel it so like myself, indeed so brotherly, made me realize that I'd been happy and that I was happy still. For all to be accomplished, for me to feel less lonely, all that remained to hope was that on the day of my execution, there should be a huge crowd of spectators and that they should greet me with howls of execration."
Wow.
There are many different translations, again, of this quote, but I love the one that says benign indifference of the universe, but there are others that say like the complete indifference of the world, or, you know, something like that. But to me, the universe makes it feel more like he's looking at just the wider, almost spiritual meaning of it all. And he realizes that the universe is indifferent, and that he has been in the moment, and that he has been happy all along because he's just been observing and, I guess, not judging. I mean, it's very, that's why I say that he feels like he's very much in a meditative state.
Right.
Super interesting.
He's observing, and it's almost as if he's observing his own actions from an out-of-body state. Like, he's aware that he's doing them, but he's not giving them meaning. He's observing himself conducting these actions. And also, you make me think, do you think this could be a whole different episode, but do you, or there isn't a yes or no answer to this, but do you think that translation does take away or adds to the text?
I think that you should always read the original if you can. Like, if you speak a language and you're interested in the author, reading the original gives you maybe a more accurate insight. So you can have more faith that what you're reading is 100% what the author intended. While specifically through this book, I saw for the first time how much of a difference different translations can make to the subtleties of an author's points. But I was also going to say that The Outsider is very often cited as an existentialist work because it talks of alienation and individuality in the same way that White Nights does. But Camus has distinguished his philosophy from existentialism and rejected the label of an existentialist. And in The Myth of Sisyphus, he basically outlines his own philosophy of the absurd. And yeah, as we said, that philosophy does not advocate for the creation of meaning in a meaningless world, which is the typical existentialist stance, but rather just for the recognition and peace with the absurdity of the attempt to find or create this meaning. So small difference, but pretty important to understand.
Do you think Camus is a nihilist?
No, I think Nihilism is inherently pessimistic, and to me, absurdism seems optimistic.
Oh, okay. That's a very interesting stance.
I think I had this conversation with a friend as well because he was saying that he was like, the stranger is giving nihilism. I was like, no, it's not giving nihilism to me. I think nihilism is a lot more cynical. Nihilism stops at the belief that life is meaningless and usually tied together with cynicism. So it just sees the world as nothing has a real existence or meaning, while absurdism is about taking that and making it good and liberating for you.
Okay. So you're thinking you can make peace with absurdism and it has an aspect of individuality because you can interpret the world and the meaning of existence how you want, and you can move forward through life with your definition of it. Whereas with nihilism, you're kind of condemned to life has no meaning.
Well, what you mentioned is what existentialism sounds like to me. So the individuality and the finding your own meaning part of it, the emphasis on creating your own personal meaning, I think that is more existentialist.
I really like that. That's really sweet.
Yeah, and through the outsider, basically, you see how the confrontation of his own mortality so directly, because he has to spend time literally waiting to find out if he's going to die any day, leads him to recognizing the absurdity of existence and finding inner peace with it. And it's so well done in such a short book. So the absurdity also shows through Meursault's freedom in creating his own values, like his refusal to adhere to societal norms and religious expectations, and just the way that he rejects all the typical values of society makes him inherently kind of an absurd character. I think he represents that to an extreme. So that's why he was a good example for Camus to craft this narrative, because it makes a lot of sense. What
Where do
resonates
I?
most with you? Because as I said, I love The Stranger. I love this book. I'd say I don't fully relate to Camus' absurdist philosophy, although I do see myself in a lot of it, but because I'm a little spiritual and, I don't see the universe as meaningless. So I think maybe my personal philosophy is a bit closer to existentialism, if I were to say which of the two I relate most to. But then again, I do really believe in finding meaning in the present moment, but at the same time, I believe in finding meaning, just like the dreamer in White Nights, in experiences and that make up your whole life. So kind of a combination of the present moment and of the moments you have already lived. What do you think?
Oh, you're asking me a question I myself am having a difficulty sitting with.
Yeah, I think
Definitely
I
valid.
might disagree with myself a month from now.
And
It's
that's
just how I
great.
see it
And
right
that's
now.
great. And if you would have asked me 6 months ago, like, where do I lie? I would have been like fighting to understand my role in the world and my meaning in the world. But I definitely am now in a position where I do believe that the present moment is truly the only one that really does exist. The past no longer exists. The future doesn't exist. I believe that we have a say in how the future is created. And I think that does lie with my dabbling and my exploration of spirituality and faith. And certainly I've sat with not believing in a higher power, but as kind of exploring spirituality and exploring religion, I really do think that there is more to say on that end. But what I do feel as a human being is that, yes, there is meaning to existence and there is meaning beyond the human existence, but I don't think that it's my responsibility to figure it out. I don't think that that's what I've been put on earth to figure out. I think when the time has come to figure it out, it will. But I really am, like I said, finding joy in the present moment
Exactly. I
in
find
my
it so
identity.
liberating in a way that sometimes you might
Right.
have experiences that you're like, what was the meaning of this? Why did it happen the way it did? What
And don't get
was
me
the meaning
wrong.
of it?
Yeah.
But like, it's kind of liberating to be able to be like, well, it has meaning as it is. Like, if you experienced something that made you happy, and it ended, and you're wondering what is the meaning of it and why did it happen the way that it did. It's like being able to find meaning in the fact that it happened and that's all, and there's nothing higher that you need to figure out is just, I think it can give you a lot of peace.
But what about suffering? How is there
because as humans, we kind of have the tendency, suffering is inherently an unpleasant experience.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. in order to justify it and to make peace with it, we oftentimes will look at it as, this is something I have to learn to get through to get to the better. What I like about existentialism in Dostoevsky's philosophy is that not only he's giving meaning beyond I need to suffer through to get to, he's kind of saying, well, there is inherent beauty in the suffering. It is interesting, and it really is like, I want to explore this a little further. I don't think my train of thought does it justice. So I guess what I'm saying is we'll be back for more episodes on existentialism.
I feel like that is, it makes me think of Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning. And I feel like if we were to talk about suffering and that, I would want to reread that and have it more top of mind. But I think also it's in terms of Dostoevsky and Camus, they both use their protagonists obviously to explore existential themes. But the interesting thing is that both of them are isolated and kind of outsiders from society, but they respond differently to their situations. One seeks connection while the other remains detached. Mm-hmm. So they're very similar books in a way, but completely different.
Right. What is interesting is that if we were to interpret Meursault, if we were to see a living example, a living alter ego of Meursault, we would definitely interpret him as psychotic. We would label him as someone who's out of his mind.
Or like we would say he's a sociopath.
We'd say exactly. That's exactly what I was going for, is someone who isn't well in his mind.
Because definitely the best way to write philosophical novellas is probably to take them to the extreme.
It's probably to not give them life, is probably to just keep them on paper and explore them through.
Yeah, I think having these exaggerated characters serves well to illustrate that. It's because they're both such short books, but they make huge points.
Huge points. So readers, mm-hmm. if you're going to read any of these, really, really take the time to savor them. Really take the time to annotate, to really think about what the authors are getting to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course, there's the myth of Sisyphus that we're not even getting into in this episode because there's so much to analyze. But if you're interested in Camus and absurdist philosophy, that's where he really gets into it. And that's where the quote that you've seen probably all over philosophy bro TikTok, "You one must imagine Sisyphus happy," comes from.
I have not even seen that.
big side of TikTok. Yeah. But definitely a very, very interesting read as well. So yeah, that's kind of all my thoughts on the topic for now. But I feel like we could talk about it for hours.
We could talk about it for, I feel like we not, this isn't surface level. Like this is scratching the surface of the surface level.
Exactly. But yeah, I mean, please let us know your thoughts on this. Yeah, let us know what you thought of these books. If you agree with our analysis, it's very subjective in some ways. So if you don't agree with something, don't come at us. We're just trying to interpret these works as 24-year-olds that like philosophy and like literature and are trying to figure out life.
Exactly. So this is meant to open more discussions.
Yeah. Let us know if you want more philosophy episodes.
Thank you, guys. It's been a pleasure, as always.
Thank you for listening. Bye.
See you soon.